Sustaining a Wingman Culture. 11 May 2010. On 20 April, a 22-year-old man with a history of violence walked into a bookstore in Wichita Falls, Texas, and started shooting. He wounded four women, then drove to a bar and killed an employee outside before he drove home and took his own life. This tragedy sounds like so many we hear about on the news every night. We've almost become desensitized to the horror and emotional aftermath, but this type of violence is something we cannot ignore, especially this event in Wichita Falls. You see, this time it wasn't just a news headline. It was an event that touched our Air Force family directly. Wichita Falls is the home to Shepherd Air Force Base and to much of our Air Force's technical training. This particular bookstore offers a quiet environment that provides a peaceful and relaxing place to browse bestsellers. For some of the airmen going through training, it offers a quiet place to do some evening studying. On that April night, three staff sergeants sat in that very store reviewing study materials for an exam the next morning. Two were former security force members. One was a former F-16 crew chief. They were all at Shepherd to cross-train into the medical field. These airmen were three of our best. They competed against thousands just to transition into aerospace medicine. That evening, the silence of their exam preparation was shattered by a man with a shotgun who barged into the bookstore yelling derogatory racial remarks. His remarks shocked them, and the shooting that followed terrified everyone. They scattered and tried to protect themselves. It happened quickly, although the moment would be frozen forever in their minds. As suddenly as it began, the gunman was gone. The bookstore's peaceful silence, however, would not return. Four people had been shot, and two of them were Jade Henderson and Deandra Sauls, our staff sergeants. Police and emergency medical personnel were on the scene within minutes. Both sergeants were transported to a local emergency room and later to Dallas's Parkland Memorial Hospital for care. Thankfully, although their wounds were severe, Jade and Deandra will recover and return to training. This is where the story ends for the local news media, but there are actually many lessons that can be learned from this tragedy. Although not wounded in the shooting, the third airman, Staff Sergeant Tanya Tay Jesser, avoided the gunfire by hiding under a desk near the shooter's feet. She watched his car drive away and yelled to the other victims that the gunman was gone. She was one of those who had the presence of mind to call 911, provide a description of the gunman, and request ambulances for the wounded. Sergeant Jesser then followed the screams to different parts of the bookstore and provided care. She directed first responders to the wounded while applying pressure to slow the bleeding from one of her fellow airmen. After emergency medical personnel were caring for the wounded, she contacted family members, reassuring them that all would be all right. Sergeant Jesser called a fellow student not at the scene and asked for help contacting Shepherd Air Force Base, the security forces, and her first sergeant. After filing her report with the authorities, she gathered the personal belongings of her classmates and traveled to the local emergency room. Sergeant Jesser did not get back to her room that evening until almost 3 a.m. She woke before sunup and was in class at 7:15 a.m. Despite her lack of sleep and all that she had just been through, she took the exam as scheduled. Tay Jesser scored a 94% on the test. The next day, I flew to Dallas to see our injured staff sergeants at the hospital. I wanted to make sure they understood that the Air Force family stood with them. Although Sergeant Henderson was in surgery, I was able to see Sergeant Sauls. I asked her if there was anything I could do, whether it was helping to notify friends, getting family members situated nearby, or even assisting with medical issues. Deandra Sauls looked me square in the eye and said, "Sir, don't let them take my training spot. I don't want to lose it." I was really touched. With everything she'd been through, Deandra was most concerned about her future in the Air Force. These three airmen were among the many heroes of that evening. Jade and Deandra were worried about their classmates and their ability to complete training. Tay acted with a determined professionalism that facilitated immediate care and added stability to a horrific tragedy. When we talk about a wingman culture, these three airmen personify such an ideal. They were concerned for others. They were selfless. The lives of many were forever changed that evening. It's not only the individuals who were directly attacked, it's their friends and families, too. In this disaster, it doesn't stop with the wounded. You see, the shooter also killed one individual that evening, even more tragic for his family and friends. The man killed was an Army veteran and the son of one of our civilian employees at Shepherd. He had his whole life ahead of him. Witnesses that evening said that his actions may have saved the lives of others. No matter how hard we try to avoid or prevent it, this type of violence can occur at any time in almost any location. We must all do what we can to stay aware of how our family members and friends are doing. Look for times that they need a little more support or encouragement. Be there for them, even when they don't think they need you. There are many heroes at Shepherd Air Force Base and the surrounding community currently supporting those affected by this tragedy. Being a good wingman is something all of us need to try to do every day. Knowing that you'll be there for others should give you the comfort of knowing that others will be there for you, whether you think that you need them or not. The Study of Leadership, 7 June 2010. Everyone has hobbies. Some people like to work in the yard, while others paint, fish, or travel. Hobbies are those things that entertain us when we need an escape, a chance to unwind. For me, I've always found leadership and its associated principles to be intriguing. Studying leadership is my hobby. I am drawn to leadership for many reasons. Most importantly, leadership is heroic to me. It is based on one person's ability to overcome interpersonal challenges and move a team of individuals toward a common goal and objective. It is all about moving the ball down the field. As military professionals, we all strive to do this every day. Good leaders must be able to operate at three different interpersonal levels: a peer, a subordinate, and a supervisor. Most people focus only on the supervisory aspect of leadership, but the ability to work effectively within a peer group benefits all associated organizations. In fact, learning how peers handle their challenges can help leaders more effectively guide their people and organization. A leader's peer group can also help work challenges on his or her behalf. After all, having several people pushing a particular issue or solution makes the argument much more powerful and persuasive. Such symbiotic relationships help all organizations move forward toward achieving their goals and objectives. To the leader's boss, those goals and objectives are called results. In our business, a leader is responsible for results, and results matter. A leader must also be flexible and adapt to his or her boss's likes and dislikes while keeping the boss informed. When mistakes are made, leaders must be open, honest, and transparent. Of course, they should tell their bosses about the good things, too, but shouldn't focus on them too long. If something is important, they'll know. Plus, good results are what they expect in the first place. Still, the most important aspect of leadership involves those we lead. Leaders continually need to hear their input and opinion, realizing that their opinions may be fraught with biases and emotion. A leader's ability to stay objective will help screen out the bias and emotion to get the information needed. Remember that the people within the organization need to hear from the leader too. It is important that the feedback not favor any particular person, opinion, or organization, including his or her own. Let the feedback act as a tool to mentor and shape future expectations. When listening to the challenges others face, don't try to solve it for them. Instead, ask what help they need in order to find a solution. Realize that 95% of the time they already have a solution in mind. If the leader always provides the solution, the team will cease looking for creative solutions and lose a certain degree of efficiency. In addition, the leader will not have as much time to spend working the issues that truly need his or her attention. Your people need a guide who can provide overarching direction for the work they do every day. A leader's ability to know when to guide and when to stay back is invaluable. there is a fine line between a leader who is hands-on and one who is micromanaging. After all, sometimes the best action is to do nothing at all. Trusting your people can be a very difficult thing to do. It might make things more difficult in the near term, but will create a more efficient and effective team in the long run. One word of caution. It can be very easy to lose perspective as a leader, to forget your own humility, and to gain a greater sense of self-importance. Never, ever lose sight of the people you lead. A leader must advocate for his or her people from behind the scenes, both personally and professionally. Your advocacy and support of the issues that you've asked them to work gives their effort more strength. Being a good leader is a challenge. It requires each of us to understand the nuances of operating as a subordinate, peer, and supervisor. I read in order to better understand such challenges. In fact, I'm often reading 2 or 3 books at any single moment. To study leadership, I focus on biographies. The challenges we all face today are no different than those faced by the men and women who went before us. Learning how they handle challenges helped me be more effective with those I face every day. In many cases, it has helped me avoid the same pitfalls others found along the way. As leaders, we all approach things differently. This is a good thing and is what makes it such an intriguing hobby to me. I encourage each of you to take time to study leadership. Not only will it make you better at what you do each day, but it will also further strengthen our great Air Force. The Intellectual Resource, 6 July 2010. Today, we are approaching 9 years of sustained combat operations. Many could argue that our Air Force has been involved in continuous combat operations since the original Gulf War in 1991. Even more challenging, today's combat operations are being conducted while the rest of the nation fights its way through a recession, making resources extremely constrained. Such an environment demands a unique blend of innovation and intellect, looking for efficiencies at every corner in order to achieve our desired effect. Sometimes it's easy to focus on resourcing and new weapon systems as the innovation, the panacea for our challenges. Doing so, however, would cause us to overlook the most effective weapon at our disposal during such challenging times, the one between each of our ears. In many ways, investing in intellect, our ability to outthink the enemy, is the most cost-efficient way to prepare for future uncertainty and to combat a clever foe. There are those that would say that there are 3 types of intellect, and we fit into a different category depending on the situation. There are those who would come up with the innovative idea, those who understand the idea, and those who wouldn't know a good idea if it hit them in the face. Now, my description of the last group may seem a bit harsh. At times, I'm sure we all feel like we're out of our element, but the times where you find yourself in the last category are also the times when you will have the best opportunity for self-improvement. You see, we each bring a unique set of skills, experiences, and intellect to different situations. Although we would all like to be the idea person, the individual who always has the innovative ideas, not every situation or challenge is suited to our intellectual talents. These are the times when we can be the most critical of ourselves and take advantage of the opportunity to improve. In today's world, the easiest and quickest way to self-improve is to increase our individual levels of education. Remember, education is how we prepare ourselves for the uncertainty of tomorrow. I know that increasing our education levels isn't always as easy as it sounds. Thankfully, the Air Force helps with one of the limited resources we balance every day: money. Scholarship and tuition assistance programs help pay for many advanced degrees and education programs. Another limited resource that most people struggle with is time. Our challenge is making the time to find beneficial education programs and then completing them. After all, if it was easy, then time wouldn't be an issue and everyone would have multiple degrees. Think back 5 years ago and then 10 years ago. Were you any busier than you are now? Chances are, no. Do you think that you'll be any less busy 5 or 10 years from now? Again, probably not. The truth is, you won't be any less busy or have any more time than you do right now. Making a commitment to complete education and self-improvement programs may move other priorities to the side. When you're weighing the relative importance of each, remember that education and self-improvement are activities that will help you no matter where life takes you. If you decide to stay in the Air Force, it will help better serve the nation. If you decide to shift into another career outside the Air Force, higher levels of education and study will help translate into increased pay and responsibilities. Either way, you win and are better prepared to successfully handle the challenges that life throws at you, especially when you least expect it. In the end, the better prepared that you are, the better the chance you could be the idea person. Tomorrow's challenges will certainly be bigger than those we face today. Our Air Force and our nation needs you to better prepare now. Your investment in education and intellect is the best weapon to combat the uncertainty that tomorrow will bring. After all, we can't afford not to. Professional advocacy. 3 August 2010. As a service member, I've fought for programs and resources throughout my career. In many cases, these battles were a matter of advocacy, my opportunity to fight for things I believed in. I began facing these challenging moments within days of my entry into military service. As a result, I have come to embrace several principles of professional advocacy that I want to share with you. We all have personal beliefs and individual opinions. However, as service members, we are expected to support professional positions. You must establish what the issues are that requires your professional energy and passion. These issues will vary as your careers progress from junior to senior level leadership, especially in the face of diminishing resources and ever-increasing global challenges. A vision without resources is an illusion. You must possess a vision. This is both a personal and professional expectation. We all have our goals or beliefs that we want to see come to fruition for our unit and mission. These ideas vary in complexity and range in purpose from tactical to strategic. As we advocate for our beliefs, we must establish a priority list. This dynamic list should be rank ordered from the most desired to the least desired. When one idea is fulfilled, the next one on the list moves up in priority. However, sometimes an item at the top of the list may find its way to the bottom without ever receiving the necessary resources. This is a reality. We live in a time of limited resources, and we must learn to balance shortfalls where resources are the most constrained. However, the first step is to prepare your vision and then go after it. Exercise practicality. When advocating for your top priority, take a practical approach. Each time I am called upon to offer my opinion on a military matter, I mentally walk through a checklist of do's and don'ts that I have developed through previous experience and observation. First, do your homework. Understand what you are requesting, what resources you need, that is, time, money, and manpower, and the risk associated with your position. Spend time researching your position thoroughly and reach out to functional experts for support as you organize your thoughts. It is also appropriate to know the positions contrary to your own. This means analyzing all sides of your argument. It is also imperative that you identify the end state. In other words, what is the desired effect you are seeking when offering your professional opinion? Keep your ego in check. In the battle of persuasion, inevitably your desired effect is not always achieved. In some cases, you must compromise for an alternative. In other cases, your opinion will be rejected entirely. Remember, you researched your position and know the facts, so now is not the time to let emotion enter into the equation. Emotion brings negative energy to the debate and takes an objective discussion and makes it personal. When it becomes personal, my experience tells me people stop listening. I think this is what great American military leader General Colin Powell meant when he adopted the following as one of his 10 personal rules. Avoid having your ego so close to your position. General Powell writes that when your position falls, your ego goes with it. Passion for your position is good. Emotion tied to ego is bad. You won't achieve everything you advocate for. As professionals, we have to recognize when our issues will not make the list or will be rejected. Sometimes this means knowing when to submit a decision contrary to our position. Please understand, I'm not talking about matters of principle. On those matters, it is important that we stand and fight for what we believe in. Ethical debates must be carefully examined as right versus wrong. We should always stand firm and fight for the right and against the wrong. The larger point I'm trying to make is an acceptance of right versus right. When the final decision has been made by leadership, we each have a choice to make. As professionals, we can accept the decision, salute smartly, and carry on as our leaders direct. Or we can lose our objectivity and resist the choice that was made. This moment is defining for us as professionals. Leaders must cultivate a professional environment. If we center our conduct on each service's foundation core values, we will establish the very environment the American public expects and service members must follow. We have been called to great responsibility in defense of our nation and must remain rooted in the principles of our oath as we move our mission forward. Therefore, when the opportunity presents itself to offer your professional military opinion, I encourage you to be objective, do your homework, advocate for your vision, and always be professional. If you do this, I guarantee that over the years, you will end up achieving more than you ever thought possible. Spouse Wingman by Leslie Lorenz. Note, a version of this article was published by the AETC News Service. 19 August 2010. I recently met two young military wives. I was so happy to meet these bright, young, and eager new spouses as they and their husbands began an exciting career in our wonderful Air Force. Randolph Air Force Base is the first assignment for one of the couples. They're originally from the Northeast and come from families with virtually no military connection. They've also just completed their first year of marriage. For the other couple, this is their second duty station. They previously had a wonderful experience at Columbus Air Force Base, Mississippi, and have also been married a year. Both spouses had been here at Randolph for a short time. Unfortunately, their common experience was that no one had welcomed them yet. This made me sad. I invited them to come to my house for a potluck salad luncheon with other spouses I'd come to know since arriving at Randolph. Six spouses attended, my two new acquaintances and four others who were married to airmen in training. The spouses of the trainees were busy, knew each other, and seemed happy and looking forward to their next assignment. I opened the lunch by sharing my experience as a new Air Force wife 35 years ago. I differed from these military spouses in that I was an Air Force brat. Therefore, I knew about the Air Force culture before jumping into it with Steve. I was also a bit older, having taught school for 5 years before we were married. I told them that a couple of months into our marriage, I went through what we now call our annulment period. Steve was so busy sitting alert, flying at odd hours of the day and night, and going to school on the weekends for his master's degree. I began to think that it had been a mistake to get married. I missed my friends, my job, and my family, and I wanted to go home. Based upon my upbringing, it was assumed I would simply adjust to the rigors of supporting my service member and everything he had to do. Over time, Steve and I worked through our initial struggles, and we've loved our Air Force life and all our assignments. A short time after our spouse's luncheon, one of my new acquaintances sent me a thank you note and said she felt like I did 35 years ago. I realized that if these young spouses were feeling this way, probably others were too. So as military spouses, what can we do? How do we respond to this inadvertent neglect? First, I implore active duty members to be aware of the sacrifices their wives and husbands make. In the scenario of the two spouses I recently met, I'm talking about the beginning of the Air Force life for new families. I observe two young people who love their active duty spouses, but have left everything that is familiar to start their life's adventure. The staff sergeant or lieutenant is doing what he or she wanted to do, serving the Air Force. The servicemen go to work, meet people, learn new skills, and hopefully step closer to their life goals. Meanwhile, their civilian spouses are in a new place, probably unemployed, and seeking employment or perhaps enrolling in college. Worst of all is the lack of social support because they don't know anyone. The active duty members should be aware and supportive while their spouse is making this transition. I would also submit that finding another couple in their situation can make the transition much easier. A retiree I once spoke to put it poignantly, "The spouse needs a wingman too." This concept of wingman transcends the active duty force. I believe every member of the unit plays a role in supporting our spouses, especially commanders and supervisors. I ask you to please consider your own experience in your unit. Did you feel welcome, cared for, and significant when you arrived? If the answer is no, think about what you can do. I understand the challenge with personal time constraints and operations tempo, but if your squadron, work area, or office isn't welcoming new people, consider volunteering to lead this effort. We owe it to each other to welcome and support our Air Force family members. This commitment involves creativity, persistence, passion, and most importantly, a heart for service to others. Are you willing to become a spouse's wingman? Love your people. 30 August 2010. I have gained a wealth of knowledge during my career, but one point remains at the top of the list. Love your people. Through Lorenzo Leadership articles and presentations, I have shared countless personal stories. While they always have different themes, one constant is the wonderful examples and lessons from people I have met. Our airmen are priceless. They are what makes our Air Force the most powerful in the world. Loving your people is a personal tenet I fervently believe in and live to uphold each day. It is core to my passion and drive as a member of the armed forces and is an essential trait for leaders. Our military forces' diverse makeup of service members and their families is as powerful a reminder of the special charge we have been given as leaders in service to our country. A humbling example of this is the story of Bradley and Sarah Sullivan. 18 months ago, Brad, an Air Force captain, was preparing for his first deployment as an F-16 pilot. Amid the flurry of pre-deployment activities, his family received two life-changing announcements. First, he and his wife were pregnant with their first child. Second, Sarah was diagnosed with an aggressive form of breast cancer at the age of 28. Following a number of difficult choices, Brad and Sarah moved to San Antonio to begin her chemotherapy, which would allow Sarah to stave off cancer and still allow normal growth of their baby. To their delight, the treatment went as planned. However, during the third trimester, the pregnancy became increasingly complicated due to the effects of the chemotherapy, and Sarah was placed on bed rest. On 8 September 2009, Brad and Sarah welcomed their daughter, Chloe Grace, into their family. But their struggles were not over. Less than 2 weeks after Chloe was born, Brad and Sarah were back in the hospital. Sarah had suffered a massive stroke, thought to be the result of the physical ailments her body received from pregnancy and chemo. Within days of her return to Wilford Hall Medical Center in San Antonio, Sarah was on life support and declared brain dead. She passed away shortly thereafter. One of the many constants that continue to sustain Captain Sullivan is the community and the network of unit leadership, friends, and family at Randolph Air Force Base. You see, Brad and Sarah were warmly welcomed into a unit that accepted them unconditionally and lovingly met every challenge with them as a family. From the day of Sarah's first hospitalization, their family was never alone as friends and family regularly visited. There was an even greater outpouring of support when Sarah passed away. Now, as Chloe fast approaches her first birthday, Brad and his daughter are gifted daily with words of support, meals, and anything else required to help them walk in their new life. When difficult decisions had to be made after Sarah's passing, Brad had a family liaison officer present or a member of unit leadership who was fully prepared to present him with all options for his family. All of this is a result of a culture of community, one that begins within our Air Force and reaches out to every member of our families. critical to loving your people is knowing them, not just what they do or their reputation at work, but genuinely knowing them. As leaders and peers, we must invest the time to determine what moves and motivates those around us. It is essential that we know names of spouses and children. It is also imperative we understand the perspectives our people share. We must see the view individuals maintain of the world around them. This dictates an investment of time spent with them to hear their stories and life experiences. This stands to strengthen the bond you share with fellow airmen and allows you to lead effectively. Inevitably, the investment we make in our people is returned. Often the return comes at a time of crisis, as in the story of Brad Sullivan. It is during this time that we owe it to those around us to focus centrally on what is in the best interest of the member affected. Loving your airman is not a catchphrase, nor does it mean passively asking someone how his or her day is going. Rather, it is an active process, an investment on the part of leaders and fellow airmen. You never know when you're going to make a difference, so never pass up an opportunity to reach out to those around you and invest in their lives. Trust me, it is an investment that will pay dividends for the rest of your life. Ordinary people becoming extraordinary airmen. 23 September 2010. During my 37 years in the Air Force, I have served with many great airmen. Recently, the Air Force announced the retirement of five of the very best. General Howie Chandler, General Kevin Chilton, and General Roger Brady, as well as Chief Master Sergeant Pam Darrow and Chief Master Sergeant Rob Tapana. Each one of these airmen has selflessly served our nation in positions of great responsibility over many long years. In fact, together they total over 173 years of uniformed service. These senior airmen are leaders of the rarest form. Each ascended to the highest officer or enlisted rank in the Air Force, demonstrating a combination of exemplary character, personal intellect, exceptional work ethic, and an unwavering commitment to our nation. They begin their lives in different places and under very different circumstances, but they have one thing in common. They exemplify how our Air Force affords ordinary people the opportunity to do extraordinary things. General Chandler grew up in Missouri. He was the son of two hard-working parents. His mom invested her life as a housewife, caring for and raising him. His dad spent his entire career in radio and television broadcasting as a writer and producer. As the future general approached high school graduation, he chose to apply to only one college, believing strongly that he was destined to fly. He was accepted to the U.S. Air Force Academy in 1970. 4 years later, he was commissioned and began his rise among the fighter community. To date, he has completed more than 3,900 flying hours, predominantly in advanced fighter platforms. General Chilton spent his early years in Los Angeles, California. His father served in the Navy during World War II, then spent a lengthy career as a program manager with McDonnell Douglas. When his future combatant commander was just 12 years old, he experienced the exuberance of viewing a cockpit for the first time and putting his hands on the controls of an airplane. Although it was a small private plane, he was fascinated by his surroundings. In fact, at one point in the flight, he turned to the pilot and asked, "Do you get paid to do this?" That flight was the beginning of his passion for aviation. In 1976, he graduated from the Air Force Academy with a degree in engineering and then spent the early years of his military career flying fighter aircraft. He attended the Air Force Test Pilot School and later, as an astronaut, piloted two space shuttle flights and commanded one. General Brady grew up on an Oklahoma farm that his grandfather homesteaded in 1889. He is the son of two school teachers. His father also served in the Navy during World War II. As a young boy, this future Air Force leader was given big responsibilities in helping run the family business. His after-school chores often involved rounding up cattle in the evening while his dad and brother spent time at football practice. In 1964, he received an athletic scholarship to the University of Oklahoma. 4 years later, he graduated, was commissioned, and was given the opportunity to complete his master's degree. After a few years as an officer in the intelligence community and serving in Vietnam, he became a pilot. Chief Master Sergeant Darrow was the second of six children and grew up in Indiana. Her mother was fully employed raising the children, and her father was a factory worker. The future chief was working in a bank after graduating from high school when she and a friend decided to join the Air Force on the buddy system. After just the second week of basic military training, her friend left, but she persevered. She entered the Air Force in 1980 and spent her early career gaining expertise in a variety of communication assignments. An NCO Academy Distinguished Graduate, she earned numerous accolades during her years of service, including being named Federal Woman of the Year at MacDill Air Force Base, Florida in 1996. A leader of airmen, she served as Commandant of the Air Force Senior NCO Academy and as a command chief for nearly 5 years, culminating her career as the enlisted leader of a major command. Chief Master Sergeant Tapana was raised in the great state of Alaska. Early in life, he developed a passion for outdoor activities. His inquisitive nature drew him to adventures as a hunter, fisherman, and explorer. His mom managed a doctor's office and his dad was a school teacher. Each of them encouraged him to act on conviction and explore his surroundings. After visiting a recruiter, he entered the Air Force on a quest to see the world. He enlisted in 1979 and spent his early career as a traffic management specialist. He received countless honors and distinguished graduate recognitions throughout his career. Additionally, he spent nearly one-third of his career as a command chief. He was the senior enlisted leader for three wings, a numbered Air Force, and a major command. Many may know these professional airmen by their duties and rank, but remember, they were once young adults with a drive to serve and an unquenchable zeal for life, much like the young airmen who make up the bulk of our force today. Anyone who knows these ordinary airmen understands one principle is central to their lives: our service's core values. I have personally witnessed each one of these airmen advocate and fight for what they believe was right for the defense of this great nation and for our airmen and their families. They also each demonstrate skillful balance in their lives because they are guided by their faith, love for family, and true belief in the principles of freedom. Each leaves behind a legacy of public service, humble stewardship, and determined leadership. While it is difficult to know how they or any of us will be remembered in the future, one thing is for certain. We each have the opportunity to make a difference in the lives of others, to prepare and posture our Air Force for the challenges ahead, and to serve in awe of the wonderful nation we are sworn to protect. Leaders come in all sizes. 18 October 2010. Earlier this year, I wrote an article about the solid foundation on which our Air Force is so securely postured, our civilian force. Often, it is the continuity our civilian partners provide that enables our warfighters to project air, space, and cyberspace power when called upon. Without a doubt, our civilian force has direct impact on the lives of our total force team every day. One of those vital civilian components of the Air Force team is our world-class group of non-appropriated fund, NAF, commonly called NAF, employees. NAF services encompass most, if not all, of the morale and welfare functions at our bases. These services vary widely and include golf courses, auto skills centers, base gymnasiums, child development programs, and libraries, just to name a few. Each of these programs is provided as a service to you and me, allowing us to relax during our off-duty time, care for our families, and take care of our health and personal well-being. These programs enable us to return to duty refreshed and focused on the mission. They are, however, perishable entities. The unique and essential programs offered by NAF services are funded by our interest in business. In other words, if we don't support them, we face the reality of losing them. This brings me to a fundamental point regarding the critical importance of leadership in the ranks of our NAF partners. Leaders within NAF services have been called to serve and support Air Force members and their families. I have witnessed this firsthand as a member of the community at Randolph Air Force Base. Randolph is one of the few remaining installations that still operates separate enlisted and officers' clubs. The sole manager for both of these facilities is a NAF leader named Marilyn Gove. She is a tenacious leader and the fuel that energizes one of the Air Force's greatest base club systems. What distinguishes Marilyn, besides being 5 feet tall, and makes her unparalleled in her career field, are several characteristics I have personally observed in my tenure as the AETC commander. First is her vision. Marilyn began her current role as general manager about 2 years ago. However, she has served within the Randolph Club system for over 14 years. Her club team is now ranked number 2 on the Air Force Consolidated Club's Fiscal Scales list of 2009. She is driven by the goal of excellence and top performance in her craft and is fast approaching the number 1 position. But her vision is not solely controlled by fiscal performance. Marilyn is motivated by a true concern for the people that she professionally supports, our airmen. She passionately believes that what she does can and will have a profound effect on those around her. Such drive is personally motivating and certainly permeating the Randolph community. In addition, Marilyn daily demonstrates a genuine approach to servant leadership. It is not uncommon to see her fulfilling duties in a variety of positions within her own clubs. These include door greeter, server, cashier, and hostess. Her energy is contagious. In fact, I often wonder how she seems to be everywhere all at once. She firmly believes that there is no job too small and certainly no job insignificant to accomplishing her mission. This alone is one of the most powerful tools any leader possesses, leading by example. Marilyn demonstrates to her staff and customers that she is fully committed to them, her clubs, and the marvelous people she works with. This is evident in the exceptional staff and impeccable clubs they operate. As military members, we receive world-class benefits that we sometimes overlook. Throughout my years of service, I've come to greatly appreciate the variety of low-cost services that focus solely on caring for our airmen and easing the stresses placed on our families. I am deeply indebted to our NAF civilian partners. They selflessly serve our military families so that we may continue serving our nation. And within the ranks of NAF employees are servant leaders like Marilyn Gove, those who believe passionately in their purpose and mission and have a direct impact on our Air Force mission. Thank you. For November 2010. This month I will officially retire and end my time as an active duty airman in our beloved Air Force. 41 years ago, I stepped off of a bus at the Air Force Academy, although it feels like only yesterday. Every day since then has been a true joy, a chance to share adventures and tackle challenges with each of you. When I stepped off that bus at the Academy, the Air Force was only 21 years old. To me, the Air Force didn't seem so young. It had always been there. I studied Air Force senior leaders of the era with awe. They had been through so much, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and some had even old green Army Air Corps uniforms hanging in their closets behind the newer blue ones. Now I look at each of you with the same awe. The airmen in today's Air Force have been given challenges like no other during this time of unprecedented regional conflict. And you all hit the ball out of the park each day. I couldn't be more proud or more impressed. As I step away from active service in the long blue line, I want to leave you with three ideals. These are three unwritten rules I've approached with each assignment. They've helped me maintain a healthy perspective during the daily challenge of balancing limited time, money, and manpower, and they complement our Air Force core values of integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. I hope that these three principles will help you just as they have aided me. The first rule is critical. We must all cherish our families. Make sure you thank your spouse, children, and immediate family every chance you get. Let them know how much you appreciate and love them. After all, our ability to serve the nation depends on their support and understanding. In many ways, their service to the nation is much more difficult than ours. High operations tempos, combined with our deployment culture, only add stress to everyone. Be understanding and invest time in their lives, no matter how busy or tired you may feel. Next, we must try to always leave the campground better than we found it. I often tell people to pick 2 or 3 major issues to tackle during an assignment. Prioritize them 1 through 3 and integrate the challenges into a long-term vision. Now, it may take several people and more years than you anticipate for the beneficial results to take hold. Be patient and let your organization get involved. After all, it always takes a team to truly improve the campground. Last, we must attempt to daily make a difference in people's lives. Remember that each moment is important. Occasionally, you will find that people come up to thank you for things you've done for them in the past. You may not have realized the significance of that moment, but it really made a difference in their lives. I am continually amazed at the emotions I experience when someone thanks me for words that I shared with them or something I did for their family many years ago. This only further reinforces the value of each moment and how important it truly is. Always speak and act with a purpose. Always set the example. I certainly hope that more often than not, I have been able to leave fewer issues for others and help make our Air Force a better place today than it was yesterday. I hope that I've been able to make a positive difference in as many lives as possible, and that while treasuring my family, I've helped others to better appreciate theirs. As a final thought, I want to express my deep thanks to the American public. It is humbling to know that our country entrusts us with its two most important treasures, the first being its sons and daughters. These young Americans serve gallantly in the face of adversity and are continually postured to carry out military operations across the globe. The airmen in today's Air Force continue to persevere while challenged with a dynamic and evolving global environment. I can say with the utmost confidence that the future of our nation is bright because brave young people raise their hand to voluntarily serve each day. Our fellow countrymen have also entrusted us with our national treasury. Public funds are the contribution and earnings of hard-working American families, and as Thomas Paine wrote more than 200 years ago, ought to be touched with the most scrupulous conscientiousness of honor. Knowing this fact has compelled me to honor the trust our fellow Americans have bestowed upon members of the U.S. military. We must never, ever do anything to violate this sacred obligation. Of course, the things that I've done through the last 41 years are, as I like to say, interesting, but irrelevant. What is important are the things each of you will continue to do as servant leaders for our future long after I've hung up my blue Air Force uniform in the closet. If you live the aforementioned ideals, cherishing your family, leaving the campground better than you found it, and making a difference in the lives of others, then tomorrow's Air Force will remain the premier air, space, and cyberspace fighting force in the world. Thank you for serving our great nation, and thank you for making a difference in my life. Aim high, fly, fight, win. Preventing Violence, 18 February 2011. Air Force leadership must collect isolated bits of information, like disparate points of light, to concentrate into a single beam focused on preventing violence. The other night I was watching the evening news when the story of the 50-year-old wife of a deployed U.S. service member stationed at U.S. Central Command headquarters at MacDill Air Force Base was reported. The report stated the military spouse had been arrested for allegedly shooting and killing her two teenage children for mouthing back to her. A TV cameraman filmed the mother being escorted by local police to the waiting patrol car. She was in a white jumper and stood stiff as a board while shaking like a leaf. As the camera focused on her face, her eyes were wide open and she had a 1,000-yard stare. The reporter interviewed a couple of neighbors who talked about how nice a person the mother was and that she even shared in carpool duties while taking local children to sporting events. Later, it was reported that several weeks prior to the shootings, the daughter had called police telling them that her mother had hit her twice before. On another occasion, the mother had been in a car accident and had shown signs of drug impairment. This tragic story touched me greatly. In 1967, my family had similar issues. That year, my father, an Air Force officer, went off to serve in combat in Vietnam for a year. No one died in my family while my dad went off to war, but he had to leave my mother, who had known medical and mental issues, and three children ages 15, 12, and 8. In those days, there was no email, Twitter, Facebook, or Skype. So communications between service member and family was infrequent. To call to Vietnam from the States was very difficult and time-consuming. A letter took almost 3 weeks to make a round trip to Vietnam. My mother was under the strain of taking care of our family, and she worried a lot about my dad in Vietnam. At times, she took prescription drugs and self-medicated with lots of alcoholic beverages. Several times, she made suicide gestures and took many of her frustrations out on us three children. I was the oldest at 15, so many of the responsibilities of helping keep our household running and taking care of my younger siblings fell on my shoulders. I remember when my 70-year-old grandfather died. My grandmother and mother were so distraught that I had to go to the funeral home, pick out the casket, and make the funeral arrangements. My mother, now deceased, was a good person, but was very ill. In those days, there was some support for military members and their families, but not like today. We are much better off as a military in taking care of our families, but as recent events have shown, we can and should do better. During the last year of my active duty Air Force career, I had the privilege to serve on the DoD Independent Review into the 2009 Fort Hood shootings, and then on the Air Force follow-up review titled Protecting the Force, Lessons from Fort Hood. We reviewed more than 20,000 pages of documents and surveyed more than 2,000 total force military and civilian leaders. We ended up making 151 recommendations. While all of the recommendations in the report are important, one stands out above the rest: the importance of information sharing. With so many deployments in the last 10 years, internal violence shows many faces. These include radicalization, harassment, sexual assault, domestic and workplace violence, and suicide. Today, we have many outstanding people at various venues who are working these issues, like those at installation-level working groups, Community Action Installation Boards, or CAIB, and threat working groups. However, as more stress is placed on the force, we have to do better. We have to be able to connect information from many different entities in a timely fashion to shine a light on those people who need help and assistance. We need a process that forces increased discussions among unit leaders, care providers, lawyers, chaplains, law enforcement officers, and intelligence personnel. The report recommended establishing a new installation-level forum called the Status of Health and Airmen Resilience Exchange, which would be linked to the CAIB. This forum would better support local commanders and leaders in identifying those experiencing difficulties. We need better ways to build a family and the whole person picture. We need a faster process to get the right information to the right person, commander, doctor, chaplain, and so forth, at the right time. I realize that even if we implemented all 151 recommendations of the report, we will not stop all violence. However, we must continue to improve our systems. If we stop just one violent act in our Air Force through these recommendations, then we will have been successful in building a better and safer service. I can still picture the mother in Tampa, her two dead children, and the victims at Fort Hood, and I remember vividly my mother trying to hold it all together while my dad was in combat some 44 years ago. We owe it to our military members and families to do everything possible to ease the strain and the violence.